How you doing, wrestling fans, and welcome to another edition of John Arizzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight Podcast. I hope everyone had a fabulous new year, and we wish you all the best in 2022. Today's show will cover highlights of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show, which aired on 1050 AM WEVD in New York City with 50,000 watts of power. Beginning with this episode, WEVD will be the new home of Pro Wrestling Spotlight, or was the new home of Pro Wrestling Spotlight's radio show, which we will cover on this broadcast. A whole new era unfolds with the move to New York City by Vince Russo and I. 30 years ago, the face of Pro Wrestling Spotlight changed forever. And to go over that change, joining me is my co-host, Mr. Bob Smith. Bob, welcome back and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to everybody. It's great to be back.
Yeah, it is a new year, 2022, and we'd also like to say happy 2022 to A-Rob herself, our producer, our editor, from the cold, great white north, Alex Robertson. Alex, how are you tonight?
I'm good. I'm happy to be starting a new year, and I honestly can't believe we're in 2022 already. It feels like the year just flew by.
Yes, and there's so much going on in the world. 2023 starts, and not talking, about everything. We all know what's going on out there in the world right now, but it is hopefully 2022 is going to be a better year, and hopefully a lot of things will change when it comes to getting this pandemic under control. But you can't control climate change, and there's such a crazy. The weather's crazy right now. I don't even want to get into any of that stuff, but thank you for being with us, Alex, as always, and all your hard work. So welcome to the show tonight. The one-man wrestling encyclopedia, Donnie Leibel, will be joining us shortly to go over this jam-packed news week from 30 years ago with his time capsule. Before we begin, I'd like to ask you to help get the year off to a great start for all of us. If you're a fan of what we do here at the podcast, a fan of vintage wrestling and the rich history that is Pro Wrestling Spotlight, join our Patreon community today. This offsets the cost of bringing you this show each and every week. In return for you joining, you get a ton of content and vintage history of this show from its debut in 1989 to all the future episodes we have to come. Membership begins at just $5 a month. And for $5, you get this podcast 5 days early each week without commercials. You also get the entire archives of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. Over 140 episodes are up on the site right now. There are several other tiers as well, which give you access to some true wrestling history from my archives. Go to patreon.com/John Arizzi, and your support is greatly appreciated. So, Bob, here it is. The move to WEVD has happened, and this episode covers some explosive allegations in the wrestling world.
What a way to crack the seal on your show, on your new radio home. And it had to be an amalgam of emotion for you because you had to move. You did move to a new station. It's a legendary number on the AM band in New York City. It's a new time slot, and you're going to have two professional wrestlers on your show with bombshell after bombshell. You must have been in some state of mind for this particular program.
Well, I was excited about the move after we had that meeting with WGBB, and they couldn't do anything to give us the show for free or share revenue. And then we went over to WEVD, and they're like, you got your time slot, but, it's over $1,000 a week. But we felt that the move was going to be a good one, Russo and I, and the anticipation of getting on this new station with the signal and then the guests. Because of what happened on their Inside Edition interview, that started the ball rolling. But when they went on Pro Wrestling Spotlight, as we'll hear, it will be unlike any show that we had done previously as far as how hard-hitting these allegations were. And even before we get started, I got to tell you and I got to make the announcement that, there is a disclaimer here. These are the opinions of Billy Graham. These are the opinions of Dr. D. David Schultz. So we're going to play some heavy duty stuff today, Bob.
Yes, it is absolutely as serious as a heart attack. This is going to be probably, you can vouch for this, Jen. It might be the heaviest of every show you've ever done. You'll have to tell me if it was, but I listened to the show with my jaw agape. I was just amazed at what I heard.
Oh, up to this point, it certainly was. But, you know, we're not in the sex scandal era yet, because that happens in just a few months with Donahue and all of that. So up to the point of the history of the show, this is the most explosive episode yet.
It had to be, because as you listeners take part in the show tonight, it just keeps going. I mean, it's one revelation after another, one statement after another, that's almost hard to fathom. I listened even today with a great sense of actually sadness, because he had a former world champion just kind of exposing the underbelly of a business that wasn't quite as clean as we thought it was.
No, it got really dirty over the course of 90, 91, and now going into 92. It starts the year off with a bang, let's put it that way. And it starts our run at WEVD off with a bang. And, you know, the one exciting thing about it is, as we talked about in the last few episodes, on how everyone is going to notice the difference production-wise on how professional this all was.
It sounds so good. I mean, the changeover and just the audio quality was so good. Like you and I have talked in private about this, is about the station used to advertise itself as being an AM stereo, which is, it's kind of like, you know, diet pizza, in that you had to have an AM receiver to get AM radio, but that's a whole nother ball of wax. Yeah. It really was an improvement sound-wise. And of course, signal-wise, over your previous radio station.
Oh yeah, there's no comparison. So, and you know, the callers, as we get into future weeks, you'll be able to see, hear that as well.
Well, why don't we go into this first clip? How about that? This is the beginning of a new era for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.
Broadcasting with 50,000 watts of power. This is WEVD, New York's Greater 1050. We're the AM alternative New York's been waiting for, with music, news, sports, and talk 24 hours a day in AM stereo. We're WEVD, New York's Greater 1050.
How you doing, wrestling fans? Thanks for hanging in there with us. This is John Arezzi for the debut program right here on New York's Greater 1050 WEVD. Welcome to the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. It's indeed a pleasure to be here broadcasting now with 50,000 watts of power. This is our third radio station we've had the Pro Wrestling Spotlight on. Started out April 9th, 1989 on WNYG in Babylon. Sometimes broadcasting there on 30 watts of power, moving over to WGBB, and here on WEVD, New York's Greater AM stereo station, 1050 on the dial, reaching about seven states right now, and hopefully many of the wrestling fans on the Northeast are tuning in right now for our debut show here. We're going to have an exciting show to kick it all off. Our special guest for our debut edition here at WEVD, former World Wrestling Federation heavyweight champion, this superstar Billy Graham, and also Dr. D. David Schultz, another former professional wrestler. Both of these individuals appeared this past Friday on the Inside Edition television show. They both spoke about their relationships in the past with the current, or actually not the current, but the four-time World Wrestling Federation champion Hulk Hogan and the alleged steroid use of the Hulkster. And we're going to kick it off talking to both of those individuals right here at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. We're not going to deviate format here as we have done. We're going to keep the same format as we've done over the last few years. We'll take your calls and comments. We'll give you a number to call in on in just a little bit to make your opinions known. We'll also lead things off each and every week with Don Liable, the excellent wrestling reporter, direct from Utica, New York, and he could pick up the station up there. So all those folks up there will be able to listen to us, and we have some exciting announcements for you today. We're starting the Pro Wrestling Spotlight weekly newsletter. Issue number one is right off the press. I want to introduce our executive producer and also the man who is putting the newsletter all together for us, Vinny Russo. Vinny, and welcome to WEVD with us.
It's nice to be here, John. You made it to the Big Apple.
Yeah, Big Apple, and what we're going to do is just really have some great information for the fans each and every week. We're not going to pull any punches here at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. We will tell you what's happening, and we're going to get right to it in just a second here. Don Liable is expected to come up, and we already have superstar Billy Graham, as well as Dr. D. David Schultz already on hold.
A little Vince Russo there for the fans who enjoyed him so much last time.
Yeah, Vinny Russo, very happy to be in New York City, and it was just kind of a eye-opener for him as we had him on the show a few weeks back. And yeah, so this partnership gets off and running with the newsletter. The first one is out, and even the beginning of the show, you know, you heard Vince there, but just a quick explanation on what happened 30 years ago. We got on the air late because there was a game or something that was being covered. There was some type of, we didn't get on the air till like 10 minutes after the hour, which that's why I was hopeful that that the listeners were going to be joining us. And of course they did, but happy to be at EVD, and we'll be covering it each and every week here. But tonight's show kicks it off with something really critical at that time that kind of changed the way people were looking at pro wrestling in the mainstream.
It sure did. And from that segment, we go right into Don Liable's newscast capsule. Don, how are you?
I'm very good, Bob, and happy new year to everybody. You know, I'll tell you, this is exciting. This is everybody's going to want, and everybody will talk about when you have people like superstar Billy Graham and Dr. D. David Schultz say what they said 30 years ago. You look back now and wow, that was so ahead of its time. And this is a show that everybody's going to talk about easily.
Well, Don, when you go into your news capsule in this edition, you actually touch upon the fact that the two wrestlers had been on television before making the appearance on this show.
Yeah, and that's what got things started. And if you listen to a radio show, talk about other TV appearances that may be coming up with, and that did come up. So it really was a snowball effect. But for them to have you know, pretty much a microphone and to say what they wanted to say for as long as they wanted to say it on this show. And the people in Stamford, Connecticut had to be cringing each time for each sentence that they were talking.
Well, as the fans will hear, John, I have to ask you, you gave these guys a foot and they took a mile. I mean, when Schultz and Graham start talking, were you prepared for the scope of what they were about to say?
No, I was not prepared for what they were about to say. I saw the Inside Edition piece, and they went much, much further on the radio show. And quite frankly, even after the show, I remember Vince and I discussing it and how crazy it was and how fearful. It was like this was the show that each and every week when we ventured into New York City to do Pro Wrestling Spotlight after this first episode, we literally were scared because we were going into the city at night and we'd park our car and we'd be looking around as we entered the building and leave the building. Sure. And, you know, no one is saying like, you know, like Jerry McDivitt said on Dark Side, you know, who cares about John Arizzi or whatever, who's going to threaten him. But we were airing something that was so explosive. And after the show, because Phil Muchnick was listening, and after the show, when he wrote that column that came out a few days later, I mean, we were in the middle of something that we didn't know where it was going to go. And then, of course, as a precursor, there's a little bit of a spoiler alert. In the next episode, Phil Muchnick comes on the show. So right. it's gonna get quite hairy.
Well, there's the thing, and for everyone listening to this particular podcast, stick around to the end. Whatever you do, stick around to the end, because it is the single most jarring segment I've heard in the history of this program, in the original radio show, because these fellas are going to talk about something that is so dark that, John, I don't even know what to say about it. It was just so off the scale in terms of its importance, and it was just scary.
Yeah, it was. And how do you think I felt behind the mic and listening to this and like, do we cut this off? Do we stop it? And I couldn't. I let them go. I had to let them go.
Yeah. What a show this is, folks. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch upon what John was talking about when they would leave the studio. You know, it was dark and whatnot. I had been to, I think, two shows there with you, John, and I can remember being late at night. It wasn't the most populated area. In fact, I don't remember, and I mean, and it's 30 years, but I don't remember people even walking around the area where the studio was. It was very a plain setting door to go in. And the whole area there, you know, if you let your imagination go, you really could, it could go pretty far because it wasn't very populated. And it was late at night, like you said. And
no, it was downtown. It was downtown Manhattan. Yeah, it was downtown Manhattan. It was in the middle of a business section. You know, it was not too far from the World Trade Center. And it was an area where it wasn't where there were a ton of restaurants, or they were just businesses that operated Monday through Friday, and mostly offices. And it was desolated, and it was a little frightening.
Well, I've been a guest on a lot of radio shows, both as a musician and in my days at Peter Bryan. Let me tell you something. People think that radio stations are like TV stations. They're not. No. Sometimes they're in sketchy areas of town. Sometimes they have antiquated equipment. So the buildings can be dilapidated. They are not glamorous at all.
No. And here, there was no security.
Oh,
there was no security going in and out of that building. None. That was before 9/11. But a lot of years before 9/11, actually. But there was no security going in and out of that building.
Oh. And being that you had such a late time slot, that had to make it even more daunting, really.
It was. And it was kind of always an uneasy feeling. Even though it was exciting to be at that big station, it was always an uneasy feeling going in and out of there, especially after this first episode.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Before we get into the meat of the show and all the revelations you're about to hear, we do have a time capsule. So let's get to Don Leibel and his news.
Don, are you there?
Yes, I am, John.
How you doing?
Very good, and a couple days late, but a happy new year to you and to all of our new listeners on WEVD.
Well, welcome aboard.
Lots going on this week, so John, thank you, and good evening, everybody. Leading off the capsule for this week's wrestling news, former World Wrestling Federation champion superstar Billy Graham and main eventer Dr. D. David Schultz appeared this past Friday on the nationally syndicated television show Inside Edition, speaking of their experiences in using steroids with Hulk Hogan. Now, the taped interviews from both claim that the drug hasn't been a foreign substance to the Hulkster for a number of years. Graham stated to have shot up Hogan with injectable anabolic steroids on several occasions, that also according to the Wrestling Observer. And no official remarks have come down from the WWF concerning the Inside Edition piece. And the heat remains on the WWF outside of the ring. Former wrestler and color commentator on WWF television shows Jesse the Body Ventura has filed a lawsuit against his former employer for the use of his voice on videos and pay-per-views without receiving any royalties. Now, according to a report in Torch Weekly, Ventura was paid for initial airing of his work on Superstars of Wrestling and pay-per-views, but believes further use of his voice should result in reimbursement. Now, Ventura has been one of the commentators for radio broadcasts on the NFL's Minnesota Vikings games for the past two seasons. Well, it appears Lex Luger's days with the World Championship Wrestling are numbered. Don't expect to see the WCW Heavyweight Champion on too many arena cards, if any, this month, due to a clause in his contract that specifies he is to wrestle a specific amount of matches only in a year. In rapidly reaching that unspecified number of matches, Luger is not booked for the promotion's upcoming Clash of Champions lineup on WTBS. Lex, however, is expected to defend his title opposite Sting on February the 29th in Milwaukee. And in shocking developments, sources close to WCW claim Luger will be leaving the promotion on March 1st of this year, a year early from a contract that currently runs through 1993. The major stipulation in this, Lex cannot wrestle for a year. And speaking of WCW's clash on January 21st coming from Topeka, Kansas, here's a rundown of the top matches. In the main event, Sting will be teaming with Ricky Steamboat, opposing Rick Rude and Steve Austin. In six-man tag action, it will be the trio of Dustin Rhodes, Barry Windham, and Ron Simmons taking on Arn Anderson, Larry Zbyszko, and Bobby Eaton. The Steiner brothers are challenged by Big Van Vader and Mr. Hughes, plus Cactus Jack and Van Hammer are scheduled to lock holds on the card. And finally, load up your video recorder, set the timer for January the 14th at 4 p.m. On the ESPN airing of Global Wrestling Federation that day, the 2 out of 3 falls title match has the Lightning Kid defending his light heavyweight belt with Jerry Lynn in Dallas's Global Dome. It is said to be a 4-star confrontation. The match was held on December 27th. Spotlight capsule time, 11:26.
You know, in most eras, you would run down the matches and the cards, and that would be the meat of a show. But 1991 wasn't like that, was it, John?
No, it wasn't. It certainly wasn't. But in this particular debut episode, and Donnie, I mean, it was almost like we all kind of stepped up our game, because your capsule, your time capsule, your news capsule from 30 years ago was the news, hard-hitting. It was succinct. It was well put together. And I think in your voice, I heard the excitement of being in a much larger platform than typically we had done in the past.
Sure. It was it's about the business. It took away the, something that was kayfabe all along, to now we're behind the curtain and airing everything out. And, oh, yeah, by the way, there are some matches coming up, but here you have a audience, and everybody's going to find out some news today on this show that nobody else has. That's exciting. We've got shows coming up. Yeah, but we have things like with Jesse. The behind-the-scenes business was getting more attention, and that was exciting for me, because for so long I wanted to talk about things like that. But, you know, coming from an era where you did that in public, this was something new, and, I couldn't wait to jump into it.
Yeah, I mean, not only the Schultz and Graham appearance on Inside Edition, but the Jesse the Body Ventura lawsuit against the WWF, those were big news. And you could almost hear Titan Towers in Connecticut, you can almost hear like the walls beginning to rattle there a little bit because this show was listened to, and it was listened to on this evening, and it was listened to in the following week with Muchnick, and it was listened to every week. And from what I understand, Howard Finkel would give a report on what was said on the show each and every week. Maybe he was assigned to listen to it, but yeah, we were in an era that now we weren't a little well-kept secret like we were on Long Island with a lot of hardcore fans. Now we were in the media capital of the world being listened to by guys like Muchnick, guys like Bob Raceman of the Daily News, and so many others. And this is where, through the exposure on this show, people came into my life that, ultimately changed it because they were able to listen to this program. So I'm kind of excited about what's in the future. And Donnie, I think the first time capsule covering WEVD was pretty awesome.
Yeah. And, one thing for me personally, by you getting to know Billy Graham more, having him come to your convention was for me the highlight, to be around Graham. And I remember specifically when he came in late at night, I accompanied you and Billy up to his room, and Billy was getting his stuff on bed and whatnot and hotel. He had brought some items with him that he was going to put in the auction. And I remember he had a colored photograph of him and Hulk Hogan together. and it was in a frame. And I remember looking at it, going, man, I really want to bid for that. And the autograph on there that Hulk Hogan autographed to Billy Graham, it said, "To Billy, oh, now you know why we do what we do," something like that. And I thought, for so
there was
many
an inside
years,
comment that, for sure. Yeah.
Yes. That message certainly was inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, great job on that first one, Donnie.
Thank you.
And more to come. So, Bob, I guess we're going to continue on. But, Don, we'll say farewell to you at this point. And please feel free to listen to the show as it's, you know, as it's unfolding, as long as you want to. And we're going to get into it now. But as always, my friend, a pleasure to have you with us each and every week. And thank you again, and Happy New Year to you.
Same to you.
Thanks, Don. Always informative. Always absolutely. The Encyclopedia of Wrestling, Don Lyman.
Yes,
no question
yes,
about it.
Yes, indeed, man. I mean, there's nobody like Donnie, man. He, the facts and figures, and we'll obviously every week we got him.
Yes, we do, and that's a good thing. Can I speak directly to the listeners now of our podcast?
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, friends, I want you to follow these instructions. Go into the kitchen. Go ahead. Go on into the kitchen. Make a nice cheese platter. Maybe some wine to go with it. Or if it's late and you're listening to this podcast, get a pot of coffee brewing. Good, strong coffee, like the Italian coffee. Get the
espresso.
Get the best can you can out of the back of the cabinet. Because we have some long clips tonight. And they're very serious clips. And you're going to want to just sit back, relax, and enjoy the unbelievable scandal you're about to hear. John, take it away.
Yeah, this is it. You know, from Billy Graham coming on the show in 1990 to talk about his use of steroids and how it affected his health. And Billy and I got to know each other really well during that time period. And, you know, from him kind of tipping me off about the Saharan trial and me breaking that story in 1991 on Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and then, of course, Billy's future appearances. This is where it hits the fan. This is where it hits the fan. So, as Bob said, you know, sit back, tune in, get ready, and let's hear what happened that night on January 5th, 1992.
Here we go with some really explosive commentary.
Now we're going to bring our two special guests for this evening. A very controversial segment that aired this past Friday on Inside Edition. These two gentlemen know Hulk Hogan very well, and we're going to bring them on right now. Superstar Billy Graham and Dr. D. David Schultz. Gentlemen, can you hear me okay?
Yes, loud and clear here in Los Angeles, John.
Well, welcome to the Pro Wrestling Spotlight. David, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. How are you, John? How you doing, Bill?
Good, my man. Good, Dr.
Great. Everything's coming in good here in Connecticut.
Okay, so we got a cross-country hookup here, and we're going to speak about what happened this past Friday. First of all, on Inside Edition, now it's a piece that has already gotten a lot of controversy, and both of you gentlemen have known the Hulkster for a long time, Hulk Hogan and Billy. Of course, you are not wrestling any longer. You've are suffering from a number of ailments and repercussions from years of anabolic steroid abuse. And first of all, it's a pleasure to have both of you here. Now, I want to get into a little bit first, perhaps with you, Billy, and then with David. How long have you known Hulk Hogan?
Well, I've known Hulk Hogan since 1970, late 76, in Tampa, Florida, before he started his pro wrestling career. He had approached me in Tampa at this time and was asking me to help him get into the business. Which I told him I would do that if I could, and then as it turned out, he got started on his own shortly thereafter. So I've known the Hulkster since 1976, late 76.
Okay, and David?
I met Terry. I'll refer to him as Terry. That's
Terry Bollea is his real name.
Yeah, and I met him in 78 in Pensacola, Florida, when he came into the southeastern wrestling territory then. As a wannabe wrestler, as I call him. He was trying to work his way into the pro wrestling business, and actually nobody wanted to anything to do with him. But, you know, with his abundant supply of steroids and the knowledge he gave the wrestlers in that area at that time, how to get big, how to inject steroids, how it makes you grow, how to work out.
Okay.
He quickly worked his way in. You know, that was his end.
Okay, before we get into the use of steroids, I just want to tell our listeners out there, we are discussing Hulk Hogan tonight here at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight, and the reasons, I guess, that both you, David, and Billy have come forward to talk about your past relationships with Hulk Hogan is because the denials of the Hulkster saying that he had only used steroids on occasions to rehabilitate himself medically, and he went on Arsenio Hall's show back in July to make those statements. This is after the big Dr. George Zaharian trial. Now, that prompted both of you to come out, I guess, was his statements on Arsenio.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll just set the tone for this thing. John, when David and I both saw that program, as millions of other people across the country, I believe it was July 18th, Terry Bollea came out there and sat down and blatantly lied to the American public about his steroid use. It was like a dagger in me. It was like someone had given me poison. But the point of this story is that lie that he perpetrated goes further than just Hulk Hogan. That lie was born in the offices of Titan Sports. That lie was perpetrated and predetermined and premeditated by Vince McMahon and his staff, along with Hulk Hogan. So the fault of lying not only lays on, the burden falls on Hulk Hogan, but also falls on Vince McMahon and the WWF. Therefore, the magnitude of what they have done, I myself am personally going to campaign across this country for a boycott of all pay-per-view television, all marketing merchandise from the WWF. I'm gonna go boycotting against free TV. Turn your channel. Don't watch the wrestling. Call in, write into the sponsors, and complain about the merchandise being sponsored on the WWF. And just let me read you one thing. I'm not alone in my desire to boycott the WWF. There's a current article in the Good Housekeeping magazine, January this year, and it's just a short paragraph, and let me read it to you. The headline of the story is "Wrestling: Good or Bad for Kids? Why do kids love professional wrestling so much? Most parents can't even begin to understand the attraction. The action isn't always real. Kids can tell when there's fake fighting going on. And wrestlers' muscles are so overinflated that it's hard to take them seriously or the sport. While fans say wrestling is good, clean fun, many others believe it's a bad influence on kids, and here's why. Three reasons they state why. First, the drug connection. Because so many wrestlers are pumped up by steroids, young fans may think that it's okay to use these drugs. Two, no true competition. The outcome of many matches is predetermined, which may lead kids to believe that's the case with all sports competition. And finally, the third point, fighting dirty. Many wrestlers ignore referees, hit from behind, and do all sorts of things parents teach their kids not to do. The closing statement, with all these negatives, maybe it's time to change the channel. And I can add another one to those three points of reasons why to turn the channel, and that's their hero, the star of the WWF, has blatantly lied to the children of this country. So that's another reason to boycott the WWF.
Okay. David, you know, you know Hulk, and you pretty much entered the WWF with him back in the early 80s. Now, can you tell us about your relationship with Hulk Hogan before entering the WWF? You guys go back a long, long time.
Yeah, like I said, I met him in, 78, Pensacola, Florida. And, when I met him, he had a van to sleep in. That was it. He didn't have no money, no way to get around or anything. He just come in trying to get into wrestling. Nobody wanted to put him in. He's so big and clumsy. So he worked his way in with me, and I kind of helped him along and told him how to work his way into the boys, how to get the guys to accept him. And in exchange for that, like I said, he introduced me to steroids. I use steroids. There's no secret about that. Me and Billy is on kind of a different thing here. Billy is has had a terrible experience with steroids. I've had nothing but a good experience with steroids. Now, let me straighten this up just a minute. Let me clean up a minute before you jump on it here. Now, Hogan introduced me to steroids, and without him introducing me to them and showing me how to use them and getting me in the gym and work out with him, I would have never made it to the top of the WWF. I want you to understand that. Hulk Hogan would have never made it to the top of the WWF without over-excessive use of steroids. Billy Graham, I'm sure, is a fine wrestler. I've wrestled him myself on different occasions, and a super nice guy. He would have never made it to the WWF or remained in the WWF as the WWF champion if he hadn't used excessive amounts of steroids. Now, if I'm wrong, Billy, you jump in there.
Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right, David. Keep on going, brother.
This is my opinion of all this, you know. And the reason I haven't suffered any damage from it is I can tell as of yet. I have years to come to meet Billy's use of steroids. You know what I'm saying? I didn't use them as long as him, and I didn't take as much as him. If I had remained in the WWF, I might be in Billy's shape right now. Because with Vince McMahon telling me personally, David, get bigger. Go see the doctor. Get your arms bigger. Go to the gym. Well, I was big enough. I was close to 300 pounds. I was never Billy Graham. You know, I'd love to be his size if I could do it without suffering the damage he suffered. I was never the size of Hulk Hogan for his what he says 24-inch biceps, which I know that's a lie. Among all the others, you know. Hulk Hogan in Minneapolis in the AWA, we wrestled each other all over the United States. And then he went to the WWF, which is a long story how Vince McMahon brought him in the WWF in order to take over or try to control all of pro wrestling and then pull me into the WWF and used me and abused me. And then got rid of me, but that's not what we're here about. We're here about steroids and Hogan lying about the fact that he uses them, because you're going to have people come on and ask you if I use them. Yes, I did use them. And without them, I would have never been where I am today, which today, like you know, I'm not a wrestler no more. I'm a bounty hunter and a very good one, probably the number one in the United States or the world. And without steroids, I would have never been where I'm at today. And, you know, it hasn't had time to catch up with Hogan yet. See, when Hogan just started wrestling, Billy Graham was the world champion. When Hogan met me in Pensacola, Florida, Billy Graham was already world champion. So he's got these years to catch up with him as Billy has just went through the last several years.
Well, Billy was a forerunner as far as one of the first pro wrestlers to really, as far as his physique goes, back in the 70s, I remember when Billy was champion, there was nobody like him as far as his look, and he was the forerunner to the Hulk Hogan era of today. You know, I just want to emphasize once again to our listeners, and we're not here to, I'm not here to blast Hogan personally, professionally, because, you know, he's not alone in taking steroids in professional wrestling. There are a number of others, not only in pro wrestling, but in all sports that take steroids. An estimated 1 million people in this country are on steroids, which are now considered a controlled substance. So right now, in possession of steroids without a legal prescription for them is considered the same as having a controlled substance, cocaine, marijuana, on your person if you're caught with them. But the Hogan situation, Hogan is a role model for millions of youngsters out there, and his public statements are just always denying the use of steroids without just the one or three times he mentioned for medical rehabilitation. David, he stayed at your home on a number of occasions, and I know the Inside Edition piece covered some of that, but I don't know if you want to bring it up or not, but he used to, from what I understand, stay at your home, I believe in Nashville, was it?
It was in Knoxville at that
Knoxville,
time.
Okay.
Knoxville and Pensacola, Florida, and also in Connecticut.
Okay. And he used to leave, from what I understand, did he used to leave steroids laying around the house? Or?
Oh, yes. In Knoxville, when he was just getting started in Pensacola, he left them. Of course, I was on the road. My family was with me sometime. When I moved to Knoxville from Nashville, I brought my family along. When he'd come up to stay, of course, my daughter was 7 years old then, and, you know, she'd move out of her bedroom and go sleep on the couch. You know, we was struggling, trying to making in pro wrestling, and Terry would come over, and she would volunteer, let him have her bid. You know, and while we would go to the gym, she would go into the room to play, and she would see all these bottles sitting there. And she'd come out and ask her mother, what were they? Because she was worried about Terry. She didn't want nothing to happen to Terry. She looked up to him. She knew he was a good friend of mine. And, of course, my wife told her, don't worry about it. It's vitamins and things you don't need to worry about. But she'd seen all this medicine. She thought it was medicine. She thought the guy was sick or something. So then years later in Minneapolis, 1983, we would go to Terry's condo and go in the basement and work out. You know, just about every day we'd work out there. And my daughter would go over, my wife would go over, and Terry's wife now, you know, they'd be all together, and Terry and myself would be downstairs working out. And my daughter would go in the room, and she sees all these bottles. Now she's old enough to read. And she reads testosterone, dexedrine, gonadotropin, Winstrol, Anavar, Dianabol, and I mean, you know, she reads all these things. She can read them now. She's old enough to read them. And she comes down and asks her mother, you know, about all that stuff. And she said, well, those are vitamins and things they take when they work out. And, you know, don't worry about it. It's, you know, she wasn't no use for her to get concerned of it. In other words, it was common knowledge. They asked my wife about it. My wife said, well, they asked her, did I take steroids? And I believe her response was, he's got a pair of wrestling boots. I mean, like, don't all wrestlers take steroids? Are you asking me? I mean, it's a common knowledge, I mean, to wrestlers that wrestlers take steroids. I mean, if you get that big, you got to take steroids. You don't get it naturally. You have to have the use, and you have to have anabolic steroids to get that big. And anybody say they don't, well, they're lying. They should tell the truth because, you know, I remember in the old books you used to look in, the old bodybuilding books is all, and I believe you can still look in them and see Charles Atlas. They use, you know, they got this ad. The guy's largest his arms was 17 and a half inches.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, this guy worked out probably 18 hours a day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he never got 22, 23 inch arms. He never weighed 300 pounds. And, you know, it was, like I said, though, I'm not knocking them. They got me to where I was. And I just hope that I continue in good health and I don't run up into the problem that Billy has run up into, because I remember several years back before Billy's problems set in on him, that I was wrestling Billy across the ring and he looked great, just like he did in 77, 78. I mean, the guy was phenomenal. And then all of a sudden, I pick up a paper and here's where Billy's having his hips, parts of them took out, replaced his ankles, all because, you know, the use of steroids and things. So I hope that don't come up on me. I don't believe it will, because I wasn't subjected to it as long as he was.
Okay. As far as the relationship that you had with Hogan later on, when was the last time both of you have communicated with Hogan, were social with Hogan, and when did those relationships break off? First, Billy, if I can go to you.
Yeah, John. My relationship with the Hulkster, I ran across him, I think, less frequently than David did. The most time I spent with him in that Minnesota era that David was speaking about during that time. And then in 1987, I had my hip operation in 1986, October, and I made my comeback with that hip replacement in 1987. And during that time, I was traveling around the country with the WWF, and had quite a few opportunities to visit with Terry and discuss things. And I remember on many occasions during 87 especially, we would joke about his ignorance of steroids when he first started taking them. He told me that the first year he took steroids, he took a shot every day for a year until he learned how to cycle them. And he told me that he got scar tissue, which is common in the hip area, about the size of a tennis ball. And as a matter of fact, Lal Alzado had those scar tissue lumps cut out recently. And so we would have these conversations in 87, doing some of those double shots that Vince McMahon had us doing, a chartered plane, and we'd do a double shot and sit up in that chartered airplane and talk about talk about which steroids work the best, which ones you would combine with others to get the best effect, different things like that. And I remember three occasions specifically in 87 that I gave Terry Bollea injections myself. One was in the Pontiac Silverdome in 87. Another one was in the Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis, and then the Cow Palace in San Francisco, all in the year of 87. For him to go out and blatantly lie about his association with anabolic steroids and only using them for a therapeutic bicep tear, which no one, all the wrestling historians, including yourself, going back to 1983, cannot find any instance where Hulk Hogan was off of wrestling for a bicep tear, went to a doctor for a bicep tear. And as we all know, I believe Sid Justice has just been out of the business for approximately 4 months, and I don't know what the tear was he suffered. I think it was a bicep tear, but here we have a documented time lapse for a man suffering a tear from a muscle injury. But Hulk Hogan, there's nowhere in the record, in the history of these records of wrestling, that he ever was out any length of time for a bicep tear. So the magnitude of this lie that he has perpetrated on the American public, and especially the youth of this country, is enormous. And I believe the man must pay his dues. Him and Vince McMahon must get in front of a camera, a nationwide TV audience, and public apologize to this country, and especially the children, for lying and deceiving them purposely.
Okay, David, you were a mainstay in the WWF, and you're most famous for, I would guess, a 2020 piece where John Stossel asked the wrong question at the wrong time, and shortly thereafter, I believe you were banished from the WWF. Was that around the last time you and Hogan were social with each other?
Yeah, it was the last time I spoke to Terry was 85 in January, and I believe that happened in 84, the John Stossel incident, which, that goes into a lot more detail, which, you know yourself, as I told you, I'm in process of writing a book, and I'm in process of doing a movie about these things, and I won't get into too much detail about them, but let me tell you how many times I personally injected Hogan with steroids, which would... I would inject him in his triceps usually because he couldn't reach around to get the needle in. And I guess it'd run into the hundreds of times, not three or four times, hundreds of times. And this guy has given me steroids. He has sold me steroids. He has sold other wrestlers steroids. I have all this proof documented, notarized statements from wrestlers that he has gave steroids to, sold steroids, and supplied steroids. And when he left Pensacola, he went to Atlanta, Georgia. He got into the same little groove there, steroids. Then to Memphis, Tennessee, and then he went to New York as Sterling Golden, I believe it was. And then he left New York, and he went to Minneapolis as Thunder Lips after the movie Rocky III, Steroid City. I have tapes of him on Johnny Carson. He can't get his breath, 320 pounds. And, this guy, like Billy said, for him to come out and just all-out lie to the youth of America, to this on Arsenio Hall show. As soon as I heard it, I had my agent pick up a phone call, Arsenio Hall. He said, I'll never have another wrestler on here because, he lied to me. He was going to come clean. He comes on here and he says he didn't do steroids. He kind of made Arsenio look kind of silly himself, just because Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan, they come out here on TV every week and they think they're untouchable. They think they're immortal. I believe they're calling him immortal now, Hulk Hogan. He can be anything he wants, but don't tell the kids that go to the gym, say your prayers, and take your vitamins. You're going to be 300 pounds, have 22, 23-inch arms. You're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. It's a lie.
Yeah, David, let me follow up on that, that vitamin. Let me jump right in here on you, and I apologize for that, but when you mentioned the fact that he always does tell the kids to say their prayers and take their vitamins.
Yes.
Well, I tell you, the local joke here in Southern California, and I'm sure in other parts of the country, in the gyms that I've been in, whenever the subject comes up about Hulk Hogan's vitamins, they say, well, what kind of vitamins do you take? Are they oral or injectable? That's what the people think about Hulk Hogan's vitamins.
That's right. That's, not saying that kids because you shouldn't take vitamins. You know, I'm,
that's right.
You know, and Billy agrees. Hey, all the kids out there listening, all the grown-ups out there listening, get yourself into the gym if you're not there. Definitely take your vitamins. Definitely take your vitamins. Work out. Stay in shape. But don't have a 7 or 8 year old kid growing up listening to this guy say, "Hey, say your prayers, take your vitamins, go to the gym, you'd be like the Hulkster." Well, first thing, you don't want to be like the Hulkster if you have to do it that way, with the massive use of steroids, totally abusing them to get that size.
Here we go.
I don't know where to start, except for
me either.
I got a flashback of the night that I was in the studio listening to this, and my head was spinning. And the thing that makes me sad, and I'm sad right now, and I was sad 30 years ago when I was having these gentlemen on the program, was that if Hulk Hogan would have gone on Arsenio Hall in July of 1991 and just told the truth, all of this wouldn't have happened. True. None of this would have happened.
Right.
And I think that's what pissed off Graham and Schultz more than anything else, was that he had the opportunity to come clean. And he didn't do it.
He didn't do it. He didn't do it.
And it pissed these guys off. And they were like, well, you know, because the wrestling business was also being trashed and tarnished in the trial of Zaharian. But after the trial of Zaharian, he had the opportunity. And McMahon, I do believe that Vince McMahon did not know what he was going to say that night on Arsenio. And I think McMahon, as I said on the Donahue show, were you devastated when Hogan went on Arsenio and said that he only used it 3 times. So I think all of this stuff would have been avoided 30 years ago if he would have only come clean on Arsenio back then.
Well, there's a lot of allegations here, but the thing is, now I've been taking notes just listening to the comments, and I have questions.
Yeah.
Number one, Graham's calling for people to boycott the WWF, the very organization that made him famous and probably pretty rich. What good could that possibly do him at that point? I know he is bitter over his health problem.
Yeah.
It's a self-inflicted health problem.
Yep.
But I don't understand what he would have to gain by making a statement like that.
Well, I think Billy also had ulterior motives, whatever they might have been. You know, when he came out as forcefully as he did and talked about this and his relationship with Hogan. And, you know, Billy is an interesting cat. Billy is like a ping pong ball. One year he loves Vince McMahon, the next year he does not, then he hates him. You know, he said on Donahue that if my wife had a chance to shoot Vince McMahon, you know, that Vince McMahon looked at him at a sexual nature. This is all on Donahue, which we'll be getting into in a couple of months from now. So then he gets, you know, he makes amends with Vince. Vince welcomes him back into the family. He gets inducted in the Hall of Fame for the WWE. And then now he had another falling out. Now he's trying to get back in.
Well, there's the thing. I recall in more recent years when the WWE put Abdullah the Butcher into the Hall of Fame, Graham said he was going to either renounce or give back his Hall of Fame designation if they put Abdullah in, because he was angry at Abdullah because of the situation with Hannibal up in Canada, where it was alleged that Abdullah gave Hannibal hepatitis by blading him.
Mm-hmm.
And he got real strident and came right out and says, "I renounce my Hall of Fame membership and all this other stuff." So when he gets angry, he kind of goes all the way, doesn't he?
Yeah, he goes back and forth. And I believe he also sold his WWE Hall of Fame ring.
He sold it.
I believe it's gone. Yeah, he sold it. That's from what I understand. And David Schultz is a different story. David Schultz was allegedly used by McMahon when the John Stossel 2020 expose came out. And he was told to kind of rough Stossel up if Stossel pushed about whether wrestling was legitimate or not. And of course, John Stossel got slapped in both ears and, you know, busted his eardrums and then sued and won multiple millions of dollars in that lawsuit. And after that incident took place in Madison Square Garden in the hallway, Dr. David Schultz was then fired.
Right.
Because there was so much heat on that 2020 episode. Mm-hmm. And Dr. D. David Schultz never went back and forth with Vince McMahon. Dr. D. David Schultz didn't give a crap. He got fired. He felt he was done wrong. So maybe this was kind of his way of also getting back. And, you know, what they say in the business, you know, giving a receipt to somebody by this stuff that was predicated by Hogan not telling the truth on Arsenio Hall. It was his opportunity. Well, of course, David was looking for a movie deal and all the other stuff that he was
doing. Right, right. Well, I don't really recall the dollar figure that Stossel received. The figure that popped into my head was $475,000, to be honest with you.
Okay, if you have a better information, I don't know. I'm speculating.
I think that's what was reported at the time of the end of the
settlement.
The settlement, right?
Yeah.
Again, folks, we're working on our memories here. We don't have notes.
It's 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And not easy to cover 30 years later.
No, it's not easy
because it's really crappy stuff.
Well,
it's really stuff that, you know, you kind of cringe at and you're like, you're reliving it. And I'm reliving it right now.
But, you know, here's what people forget about steroids. Everybody thinks you take a steroid. Steroids are actually a very helpful medicine when prescribed by a doctor. Steroids can help you recover from injury. Steroids can help you heal faster. Yes. Steroids are not necessarily toxic in your system if they're used correctly. The problem is professional wrestlers allegedly get them on the black market and use mega doses to build bulk. Some wrestlers didn't even use them to build bulk. They were just trying to recover from injuries faster. So, yeah. But the way they were acquiring the steroids was the problem.
Yes.
And that tends to get lost in the sauce. I mean, steroids are not evil, but it's the intent in which they are used and acquired that makes them illegal.
And
there was a time, and you're playing devil's advocate, there was a time when they weren't illegal.
Yeah, that's very true. It was 1988 that they became a controlled substance, I believe.
Right. And I'm sure a lot of these fellows were using them long before that point.
Yeah.
Long before that point. I mean, superstar Billy Graham was champion, what, 77?
Billy Graham was won the title on April 30th, 77, against Bruno. And Billy Graham had come into the WWF a year and a half earlier. And he had the physique, that chiseled body that McMahon fell in love with.
There was never a better body in wrestling than Superstar Billy Graham, ever. He was one of the most perfect physiques you will ever see. Looked like a rock, yet I don't know how to put it. He was just so masculine looking.
He was one of my favorite subjects to photograph because of his charisma, because of his muscularity, because of him and the Grand Wizard. I mean, the posing. He always knew where the camera was, and he knew that he looked different than any other guy that ever stepped into the ring. And he knew it, and he got the championship over it. And, you know, just for speculation, if they would have turned him babyface back in the day, he might have had a run that could have rivaled Hulk Hogan's.
I absolutely agree with that. And, it was more to it than just a physique. It was the skin tone, the hair.
All of it.
The unbelievable power he had on the stick. People loved him, even though they hated him. You know, that's a hard tightrope to walk.
Yeah, that's where Hogan kind of, you know, emulated Billy Graham in promos later on. Billy Graham emulated guys like, you know, Muhammad Ali. I mean, so it was kind of this, and Hogan emulated Billy Graham. Billy Graham was kind of a hero to Hulk Hogan.
And, you know, people tend to forget this. When Graham was champion for the year that he was, he drew
everywhere.
And, you know, I think he attendance kind of went up for a little bit at MSG when he was the champion. I'm not saying a whole lot, but I know it went up a little.
No, it was in the heat and the crowd pop. And it was kind of like people loved to hate him. He was cheered by a lot of the fans, not really booed like a typical heel was.
Mm-hmm.
So
maybe the first on the East Coast that ever achieved that.
Yeah, I think so. I think the Valiant brothers were kind of you know, they also had this kind of cult following. But Billy Graham was over the top. No one ever liked him before. And the unfortunate thing for Billy was when they gave Backlund the title in February of 78, you know, that was preordained for over a year, you know. So yeah, they knew that was like, it's not like today where booking's on the fly where you get to change a title. All right, you know, in 2 weeks, this guy's going to win the title. You know, television booking. But back then, Vince McMahon Sr. Was he had a direction, and he wanted an all-American babyface to be the champion after Bruno had decided that he didn't want to hold the title anymore, and they gave it to Billy, and then Backlund wins the title in 78. But, you know, and a lot of people were disappointed when Backlund won the title because he wasn't Billy Graham.
Which leads to the obvious question. If they had turned Graham, would he have been a more successful and popular babyface champion than Bob Backlund was?
Oh, now,
Backlund did, you know, history tends to distort. Backlund did fine. I know that not, you know, he had six years, right? And near the end of that run, I know that things kind of petered out, but they always do in wrestling when the champion's a champion that long. People say, I've seen that. But I just wonder if they had chosen to go the other route and turn Graham into a slow turning face, if that would have been even more successful than Backlund was. And I'm not putting down Backlund. Don't get me wrong.
No,
but it's something that's always entered my mind because people love Graham. There's no question about it.
Yeah. 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 I could, you know, I could attest to that myself because I was a huge Billy Graham mark. You know, I probably have more pictures of Billy Graham in my archives than anybody else, him and Bruno. I mean, but, you know, you knew that there was something special. Like, in, you know, you call it the it factor, whether you're a Hollywood movie star or whether you're a baseball player or whether you're a wrestler or whether you're an artist in the music business. Once you have that indelible it factor, which Billy Graham had, you don't forget him and you never will.
Very well put. You can't put it better than that. He had, you're right, the it factor. He was the man, the perfect choice. Yeah. To beat, not only, you know, win the championship in the first place.
Yeah, I was blown away when I first met Billy, and it was his very first show in New York City. George Napolitano and I went and got Billy from the airport, and we took him straight to the New York State Athletic Commission to get his license that day. So, I mean, just meeting the guy for the first time was like unbelievable, you know, mm-hmm. and that was his first Garden show. And so, yeah, Billy and I, you know, have had interaction a long time. I reached out. Donnie had given me his email address, and because I really would have loved to have his input on a show like this and just didn't hear back from him. You know, I sent him an email, but Billy is in a bad place right now. He's bedridden for the most part. He's been in bad health for a long, 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 long time. He's got a GoFundMe that's been up for a couple of years now. And he's still suffering the effects of what happened years ago. And here's the other thing I just want to bring up. I mean, even Hulk Hogan, because the steroids after years of abuse, Hulk Hogan today, if you look at Hulk, I saw a picture of him last week with a cane, you know, just drawn. And it just kind of makes you think. I'm not alleging anything, but it makes you think about the years and the extensive use that he had, that, you know, you look at the guy today and you feel bad for him.
Yeah. You know, and it's a tough business, you know, it's tough on the hips, it's tough on the joints, it's tough on the knees, it's tough on the back, it's tough on the neck. I mean, Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, who recently passed away. I had the same neck injury as him and I know what he went through. These guys have a tough way to make a living. It's harder than any athlete. I don't care what anybody says. Wrestlers have it really tough, and in any moment you can take a wrong step or a wrong fall and everything changes, and it's a tough road to hoe. And when you add steroids as another layer of danger on top of all that,
yeah,
it makes it a very rough senior years for these guys.
Oh, I can only imagine. You know, Mick Foley was not a steroid guy. Look at him. Look at, you know, this poor guy is like all the years that he put his body through abuse. But the steroid stuff is a different story. And you're saying, like, you get up in age. Like, I've had two back surgeries. Mm-hmm. I never, you know, what did I do? Have two matches in the ring? That had nothing to do with it, really. I have a compressed vertebrae in my neck. And, you know, I have a torn rotator cuff right now. So it's like, it's not easy getting around these days. But you can imagine what these guys did to their body. So the steroids that, you know, elevated their performance and gave them these incredible bodies. But, you know, after years and wear and tear and taking bumps in the ring and the abuse that they put themselves through.
Yeah.
You know, it's just really, it's sad. It's a business that, you know, but you go into it knowing the risks, and we're getting off topic a little bit, but you go into it knowing the risks. But in this era, this 30 year ago era that we're covering right now, hearing Schultz and Graham talk about this, it just kind of saddens me a little bit that things could have been a lot different. Getting back to the original point, which is like, if he only did the right thing in July of 1991,
right?
Who knows?
Well, there's that other factor too, that we saw so many wrestlers dying young, like the 80s stars passing away while the 70s stars were still with us.
Yeah,
that's important. And, you know, we admire you wrestlers. We really do. We don't want to see you get sick and have an early demise.
No.
That's really at the heart of all this. You know, it really is. Everything else is secondary.
We're covering history.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure today's guys, you know, with the organizations and the drug testing and the wellness programs, and let's not, you know, let's call a spade in a way. I mean, it's like Tony Khan, AEW, Vince McMahon's, WWE, there's much more. They're much more mindful.
Yes.
Of their health, yeah. Their futures. Yeah. Yeah, we're covering an era like 30 years ago where, you know, it was kind of like the bigger you are, the bigger your push. As much as they never would like to admit that was the case. Mm-hmm. up until after Zaharian's trial and after McMahon's trial in 94 when he was acquitted, that's when the business took a different turn and the steroid era at that point was over.
Right. And, you know, there's the other, like you say, the mitigating factor of Hogan. You know, say your prayers, take your vitamins, la-di-da. But, you know, sold to children, which I don't think any wrestler should ever be sold to children, but that's just my two cents.
Yeah.
And that's what got us here.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what got us right here. So our next segment, you're going to take some calls. And I really like what you did on this segment because you put your foot down. You said, keep it on topic, folks. Mm-hmm. And they did.
Yeah.
Explain your rationale.
Well, I mean, it was an important show.
You had a slew of people calling and asking where the Ultimate Warrior was. You didn't want that on this show.
No, I was kind of forceful here. It had to stay on topic because if someone had called in and asked about the Ultimate Warrior or you know, who was going to win the Royal Rumble after we're getting all of this information, I think the fans understood that for the most part, that this was serious stuff. So let's stay on topic. And I was glad that I did put my foot down. And, you know, people in the future weeks would have plenty of time to talk wrestling.
That's right. So here is a lot more meat here, folks, as John takes calls from a variety of fans.
We'll take caller number one. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Paul Emmert.
Paul, where are you calling from?
From Flushing, Queens.
Okay, you have a question for our guest.
Yes, I have a question. Besides, first, I have to, if I can have his autograph. And also, I was just wondering...
lower your radio, please, Paul.
I'm sorry. I was just wondering, just a curiosity sake, you said that Hulk Hogan is on steroids. Would you say other wrestlers are on steroids, such as Ric Flair or Sting, are taking steroids also?
Well, none of you gentlemen want to take that question.
Yeah, well, I can't speak for other wrestlers, but I can put in a lump sum approximately 90%. I would say, or even 95% or even higher of all WWF wrestlers have been taking steroids. Now, since Vince McMahon has supposedly incorporated drug testing for steroids with supposed suspensions and fines if you fail the test. And their first test has been now going into the 8th week since it's happened, and there's been no results notified to the public. No one knows if anyone failed the test. No one knows if there's been a suspension or a fine. And Vince McMahon stating that he has the greatest steroid testing program, even better than the NFL, hasn't even announced that he has a rehab program for people trying to go off.
Yeah, but he was taking steroids himself, too.
There's a man admitted taking steroids himself, obviously. And Titan Sports, according to the Federal Express receipts that were shown on the Inside Edition show Friday night, they received over 36 pounds of packages from Dr. Zahorian, and steroids were in those packages in the year of 1988.
Right.
So as far as Sting and the other wrestlers go, we know that we can lump them into a blanket figure, but I personally do not know myself of these people taking steroids.
Okay, thanks for your call. And as far as the autographed photo that you were wondering about, just keep listening here to the show, and we'll know, let you know how to make, we'll make those available to you. The number here is 212-477-56. Let's go to our next call. Where are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Joel Gertner. I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
Joel, how you doing? What can we do for you?
Nothing much. John, good luck on the WEVD.
Thank you.
I sat through the show before it. It sounded like the Colonel Mustafa show, but it was well worth it.
Well, we appreciate you hanging in there with us.
Okay. Dr. D.
Yes.
I can't tell you enough how much you made the Butcher Vachon's wedding piece.
Well,
on TNT, I thought that was very funny.
Well, I thought it was funny too, and you know, as you should know, if you don't know, that was all Vince McMahon's planning,
right?
For me to hit the girl with the pie, and,
right?
You know, everything else that I did on TNT.
One of my favorite memories. Just a couple questions to either of you guys that would know this. The first one is, when was Hulk Hogan's? When did he stop using steroids? And what was the real reason? Was it an accelerated heartbeat, I've heard? When exactly was it, and what was the reason? And the second question is, if you could approximate maybe with him or somebody else, what percentage of the wrestler's yearly salary do you think goes into the steroids?
Well, I don't know Hulk Hogan's, if he's, it appears that he is off of steroids now. So he may have simply, since the Zahorian trial and all the heat that's come down, he probably is going on cycles. I know I've seen him a little bit heavier than he is now. I've seen him a little bit thinner than he is now. So he's been fluctuating. And I would say he was definitely taking steroids up and until the trial last June.
Okay, Billy, not to interrupt, but didn't he, was on Entertainment Tonight and did want the results of his steroid test made public, and that is yet to happen?
That's right.
Okay. And secondly, Joe, quickly.
Did he have an accelerated heartbeat at one point? Was that a reason? And also, what percentage of his yearly salary do you think went into the drugs?
I don't know, Dr. D. I've heard rumors also of a heart problem, but nothing substantiated by a doctor and made public. As far as the financial input to buying steroids, you can spend thousands of dollars a year on steroids very easy.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Joel.
Bye-bye.
Okay, number to call here is 212-477-5610, and that is the number to talk to superstar Billy Graham or David Schultz. Who do we have on the line right now?
Glenn from Baldwin.
Glenn, how you doing?
How are you, John?
Okay.
I got a question for Billy Graham.
Go right ahead.
Mr. Graham, I was wondering, you came back into the WWF, I don't remember what year it was, you were doing a lot of MSG broadcasts. Now, if you knew about this all going on with the steroids, why did you come back into the WWF?
Well, because I was addicted to steroids. You see, not only do steroids, like Dr. D mentioned earlier on in the opening of this broadcast, that steroids have done him nothing but good. Well, they did me nothing but good also until I started having problems, because steroids give you such a euphoric feeling, and they give you such a feeling of self-esteem. You feel like you're impregnable. You feel like you're nothing can harm you, nothing can hurt you. You can accomplish anything you want to accomplish, and it's a total psychological steroid addiction. And so the reason I didn't say anything, I was addicted to steroids, you see.
Okay. Glenn, thanks very much for your call. We're going to go to our next call here. And if possible, can you possibly write down the names of the callers and maybe flash them over to me so I know who I'm speaking to? Thank you very much. We're going to take another call here at 212-477.
Calling from Brooklyn, New York.
Okay, what can we do for you?
Yeah, I'd like to talk to Superstar Billy Graham.
Go right ahead.
Hi, Superstar. You said you gave, you injected Hulk Hogan in 87 with steroids on several occasions.
Yes, that's right.
Right. Well, I want to, after your operation, you said it was in 86. Didn't Hulk Hogan see what happened to you, and you think that it might happen to him also?
Well, at that time in 1986, at the time of my operation, I did not know that steroids caused the damage to my hip.
Oh, yeah.
I was not told by any physician that steroids had done that damage. I was not alerted of that until 1990 after my ankle operation. So there was no evidence or proof to me that steroids at that time had taken my hip out.
And didn't they? Would have to remove some parts of your ankle?
Yeah, they had to take, pardon me?
They removed parts of other anatomy to replace your hip?
Yeah, they had to take out the whole hip joint and put a steel joint back in.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It actually is made out of titanium.
Wow. And how about your ankles? What did
The ankle, they had to cut out the ankle joint. My right leg is now approximately 1 inch shorter than my left leg. The whole ankle joint was had deteriorated from what happened when you, some people, that is now occurring like me, when you you take a lot of steroids on a long-term basis and a prolonged term basis, you build up plaque from the cholesterol, and that plaque buildup clogged the small blood vessels and capillaries in my hips and my ankles and prevented the blood supply to go through. So without blood supply to the joint area, your bone dies. So my bone died at my hip. They had to replace that. In the ankle, the bone had died. It crumbled up, and they had to go in there and cut out all the dead bone, take fresh bone from my shin and from my good hip, put it back on my ankle, and bolt my ankle back together.
Okay, thanks for your call. Number to call here, 212-477-5610. Let's go to our next caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, John. It's Dean from Queens.
How you doing, Dean?
Okay, I'm one of your Booster Club members.
How you doing?
Okay. First of all, I'd like to wish you well on WEBD.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and I'd like to just say to Superstar Graham and to Dr. D that the two of you should be commended for coming out on this very controversial topic. And, you know, I just want to say that. The question that I have for the two of you, either one of you can answer it. Superstar Graham, you said that you shot up Hogan that you could recall three times in 87. My question to you is, you know, for those of us who are not, you know, versed in the use of steroids, thankfully, how long does it take to take effect?
Well, the injections that I gave Hulk Hogan were an oil-based substance, and after injection, it's released into your system very slowly, whereas compared to orals, oral tablets are assimilated much faster in your system. You start seeing effects from an injectable oil-based steroid. Within 3-5 days, it starts seeping into your system, and it stays there for a much longer period of time.
Okay, thanks for your call. Dean, let's go to Keith from Queens on line number 4. Keith, how are you?
Hi. I wanted to ask Superstar where he was from the time period of 1978 to when he came back and had the angle with Bob Backlund in WWF in 1982, and if that had something to do with steroid abuse when he was gone.
No, I just had job burnout, and I just was in Arizona out in the desert just recuperating from all the traveling.
Okay, and I also wanted to ask, Vince McMahon said he used steroids, but Was he a real steroid abuser? Was he taking heavy dosages or just cycling to look good?
I personally don't know. Maybe David knows more about his steroid use. I don't know more than what he just stated on that press conference he had back in the summer, that he in fact had taken cycles of I believe it was Decadorobalin. But I don't have any more knowledge than that.
Yeah, I believe it was in the article you're referring to, Bill. He said he experimented. He experimented with Decker.
Yeah.
Well, as far as knowing personally what Vince McMahon does outright, I don't know if there's just very few people know what he does outright. He keeps his stuff private. He got all of his little stooges that does his other stuff for him. But, you know, no, I don't think he overindulged in them. You can look at him and tell he hasn't abused them or hasn't been on them a long time. You know, I can tell that by just looking at him on TV.
Okay, back on the phones now. Let's go to Evan from Great Neck. Evan, you're next.
Hi, John, Billy, and Dave. How are you all doing?
Good, thank you.
I guess my question goes to either one of you who can answer. Do you think maybe that the steroid problem in wrestling could maybe clean itself up. If someone decided to say, this guy's on steroids, or this guy and that guy, and for people will realize that it's not just one person. And when they start hearing names, and I guess no one wants to take the blame for naming people, but maybe it's time that they have to name names for people to realize how many wrestlers are really on steroids.
Yeah, I don't know what David thinks about that, but I tell you, my personal opinion is it's totally up to Vince McMahon. He's the man in control. He's the man in charge. He's the man who says that he's now testing for steroids, but yet we haven't heard. He said his testing procedure will be better than the NFL. Now, the NFL tested 8 players randomly every Sunday during the regular season and made public the names of people who failed those tests. Vince McMahon has tested 8 weeks ago now, going on 8 weeks, and yet the public doesn't know if one person failed the test, a dozen people failed the test, or if anybody has failed the test, and if the people who might have failed the test, what the suspension would be, what the suspected fine might be, or what could possibly, what type of discipline would follow. So we're totally in the dark with the testing procedures of Vince McMahon.
Okay.
I agree with Billy on that. And another thing, remember how big Vince McMahon is, and he, whatever results he wants to come out, it's my opinion that those results will come out. A guy can be dying of an infectious disease and not bring it out. If he doesn't want it out, it's not going to get out.
So you're saying selective discipline, in other words, also?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, we're going to go back on the phones right now. Let's go to Don from Oceanside. Don, on line number 3, you're next.
John, how are you?
Okay.
Superstar David, it's nice to hear from you. I have to ask Superstar, I'd like to ask you this question, considering you've been with the WWF longer. Do you think that if Vince Sr. was still around, I know he's been dead for about 8 years now, do you think if he had been around, do you think the steroid problem would have proliferated as much as it has now?
That's a really interesting question. Vince Sr., certainly one of the problems wouldn't have arisen, and that's going across the country and taking other people's television and territories away from them, like Vince Jr. has done. But
right.
As far as the steroid problem, I think Vince Sr. wouldn't have been able to stop the onslaught and the siege of wrestlers taking steroids that are doing it now. I think that was a natural occurrence of the late 70s and the 80s and in the society we live in. He would have had to deal with it, definitely, but I don't think he would have himself been able to stop it.
Okay, thank you. And about the drug testing, I heard that Thomas Borick, who wrestled as Kato, I heard that he had failed the drug test. I don't know.
Yeah, we have no knowledge. We have no knowledge about that at all. The testing that also takes place in the WWF for other drugs, other illegal drugs at all. Is that pretty much in your opinion, David and Billy, is still a problem in WWF and other circuits, other drugs?
I'd like to jump on this one that, the other drugs, like you know, you're talking about steroids here on this show.
Yeah.
But you just got a tip of an iceberg, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't even mentioned cocaine, marijuana, heroin. You haven't mentioned crack cocaine. You haven't mentioned all the criminal activity going on there, the criminals that are wrestling, convicted felons that are wrestling for the WWF. And when I was wrestling with them, according to the commission, if you was a convicted felon, you couldn't even have a license in a lot of states. And I know for a fact that there's several convicted felons wrestling for Vince right now. And it would shock the whole world to know who they are.
Yeah, it sounds
like I told you. That information is on the way, coming out in paperback or...
get that on your local newsstand.
Yeah, really.
In your local bookstore.
Yeah, really. And, there's definitely other drugs there. There's no secret. It's been in all the newspaper. Several arrests have been busted with cocaine, marijuana, other prescription drugs, and without prescription, you know, Class 2 substance, Class 3, Class 4. They got them all. I mean, it was a walk-in drugstore. When I walked in, like Billy Wallagona question was talking about, when Vince Sr. was there. I met Vince Sr. in 83, and, I believe he passed away in 84. And what I met of Vince Sr., he was a real nice man, and everything he ever told me was opposite of what Vince Jr. has done. If he told me, I would be in this area for a year, I could
look forward to that. And Vince Jr. tell you you're going to be here a year, you might be here a month, maybe here 2 days. But he had knowledge of steroid use because Dr. Cesaria was giving all the boys in Allentown, Pennsylvania, at the wrestling matches. That's where we re-upped our steroid supply. Plus, there's a couple more doctors around the United States has really, they're always conveniently there for you to get whatever you want. And like I said, in the book, you'll be able to read about those people, too. And I have prescriptions from those doctors for 50 bottles of testosterone, dexedrine, at one time, one night, given to me by a doctor that was in the WWF dressing room, not Dr. Zazorian either. Matter of fact, this doctor is a very close, dear, close friend of Hulk Hogan, Terry Bollea.
So some powerful information here tonight at the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.
The more they talk, the more your eyes get wide.
Yeah, and the more I kind of like, my God.
Yeah, cringing. It's cringing. It's cringeworthy.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, a lot of calls all weighing in, you know, from Joel Gertner, who obviously became famous at ECW, and two others who are just really trying to even cross-examine these guys a little bit about some of the allegations that were being made during this broadcast. And, you know, towards the latter part of a segment with some of the things that Schultz was saying, I mean, I just sit here listening, and obviously the disclaimer is like, those were the opinions of David Schultz, man. And
right. Even today, we must emphasize these are people's allegations and opinions. Yes. I don't know. Did he ever write that book?
I don't think so. He might have had a book. I'm not even sure, Bob.
Nor am I.
I'm not even sure. But I'm sure some of the people listening to this podcast would know it all.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
These fans, absolutely. And I'll tell you something else. I really liked Graham's answer to an early question when he was asked about, well, why did you go back to do color commentary after leaving? You know, why didn't you say something then? And it was a perfect answer. He was still on him.
Yeah.
You know, he was still doing it. He was even wrestling, and it seems like he was still using.
Yeah.
That's really sad. It really is.
Yeah, it was a very horrific time period in the pro wrestling business.
It definitely was. I think we'll get to our last clip. And this is the hardest clip I will ever present on this podcast.
Yeah. And this was this clip, some of the statements were published in the New York Post a few days later.
I give my little clips nicknames here. You know, when Alex and I go over the clips, and I have I dubbed this one Graham's Bombshell Point.
Yeah,
because he's about to make some statements that are both riveting and horrifying at the same. And I mean this with every sense of those words.
Yeah, if you heard, folks, if you thought this show was explosive, the ending of this show,
yes,
makes it even more explosive.
There's never been an ending like this, and I think in the history of your show, John. And no. I listened to this with my jaw agape, and
yeah.
I felt bad for everybody. Just even talking about these things.
I think Vinny Russo was turning white in the control room.
his face was probably
drained of all the blood, because I know mine was.
Because stuff's about to go down here in terms of verbal comments, and I'm sitting here, I don't even know how to describe this. Why don't we just listen and
go ahead.
Let the listeners make up their minds about Graham's bombshell point.
The finale.
Gentlemen, you still there?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Let me make a real fast statement before you take your next couple of calls, John.
Okay.
David and I both have been, since our show, Inside Edition, aired for Friday night, people have been calling us all over the country and applauding coming forward and exposing Terry Bollea for the insidious lie that he has perpetrated on this country. And I would just like to say that a lot of my friends in wrestling, including Big John Studd and Jesse the Body Ventura and Terry Funk, and their family members have expressed concern about the safety of my health. And I would just like to go on record as saying that back in August, after the Zahorian trial, U.S. attorney who prosecuted Zahorian, Theodore Smith, contacted me
and wanted me, offered me with the FBI to either one, wiretap my phone, or two, put a wire, a live wire on me and send me into Vince McMahon's office in hopes of gaining information about him, because there is an ongoing investigation right now by the FBI. And they told me the reason they were concerned and interested in investigating Vince McMahon is because they felt the man might be connected to the mafia, the WWF connected to the mafia. So I'm just going on record as saying now, if anything happens to me or any member of my family, I want the FBI first to start their investigation with Vince McMahon and the WWF. I just want to make that clear. Now, I'm sure that if they tried to harm either David Schultz or any member of his family, they would have a much harder time, because this man is the best bounty hunter in the United States and the world, and I understand has an arsenal, a legal arsenal, and I think it would be a different story with David than myself. I just want to make that point clear, John.
Hey, Billy.
You're absolutely right, Billy.
Can I just...
If they want to harm me, they know where I live.
Mm.
They know where I walk the streets, and if they don't know, all they got to do is get in touch with me, and I'll tell them, and I'll meet them. And, you know, it's not like the gun show Vince McMahon put me on, made me look stupid like I don't know nothing about guns. I'm an expert shot, and in Connecticut, I carry a MAC-10 fully auto, and I carry about 150 rounds on me at all times. And that's just one weapon in the bounty hunting that I do. But, you know, I'm not worried about anybody coming to get me or my family or anybody else because, you know, first thing, you know, I've got some good connections with different people, too, and, you know, I wouldn't know if that was going to happen. And
yeah, that's right, David. But I'm just saying that our friends have voiced their concern about our safety.
Definitely have. I've got threatening phone calls in here. I've got about six in the last 2 days, since Friday night. I have those on my machine recorded. I don't know who they're coming from. Whoever they're coming in from, they should take speaking lessons. You know, I mean, they use these voice things that change your voice. Which, you know, that's okay, too. You know, I mean, there's no problem with that.
Well, not to interrupt, but as far as the statement you just made, Billy, I'd like to be included in on that as well. As far as anything that happens to me or any member of my family, man, it's kind of a scary thought.
No, well, the thing is, we're dealing with a subject here that could affect millions of dollars worth of merchandising, and it should justifiably do that, because we have a superhero to these children of the United States of America, a mega hero, a mega star, who has come out and blatantly lied and deceived the kids of this country. And I believe that if you lie to a child in the magnitude that Hulk Hogan has, that falls in the same category as child abuse, and I believe it is.
Exactly.
Wow, it's been a powerful, powerful program here today, and unfortunately, we're just about run out of time. Billy Graham and David Schultz, I really appreciate you guys coming on here to speak about the subject, which is not going to go away. It just seems to get stronger and stronger as the months go by, and I appreciate both of you guys coming on.
Thank you very much, John, and it was an honor being on with you, David, and I'm looking forward to some more shows next week and possibly some more talk shows coming up on television, maybe the Donahue Show in 2020. I know they want to do a piece on this, and I'm really looking forward to being with you on these shows, David.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to being back with you again, Billy, person to person on the stage, and like I said, they've just touched an iceberg, and we have documented proof on everything that we have said. We haven't said nothing. We haven't come out and said anything that we can't prove. And like I said, again, I want to say that I'm in process of writing a book along with Billy Graham's information, my information, our documentation, and a movie also. We're in negotiations now with different people, and you will not believe what goes on in pro wrestling, in the WWF, and you will not believe the steroid abuse that is still going on. And it's going to continue to go on. There's no way it's going to stop, not unless they come out with a testing program where that when they come in, they have the government come in at a certain time.
Yes, that's right, David.
Walk right in and say, yo, you, you're getting tested tonight. Let's go.
John, all I have to say is,
good heavens, man. Hmm. Oh. Yeah, that was kind of listening back to that now for the first time in such a long time. Explosive statements and, you know, the mafia allegations. I can't even believe that would be a scenario personally. But listening back to it, Explosive and Billy, you know, when they said they wanted him wired or his phone tapped, and, you know, you have to really look at the possibility about the federal investigation that led to the arrest and trial of McMahon in 94. A lot of this stuff seems to tie together when you look, when you're looking into the future as well.
Right.
But and the Muchnick column that came out a few days later, and who knows what was being, you know, being investigated, and being the, you know, what evidence was being accumulated for the arrest and the trial of McMahon, who he was acquitted. Let's just say that. But this stuff was not easy for me to cover, and it's not easy for me to listen to today, because there were explosive bombs that were being thrown left and right. And you listen to it today and you're like, holy smokes, this was crazy.
No fan, promoter, wrestler, no law enforcement wants this. No, nobody said, you know, let's go out around running around exposing each other to the illegalities that have been taking place. Nobody wanted it. Nobody saw it coming. And the fact that it was so double barreled all the time, with revelation after accusation after headline after, and it was all on your show.
And it became a circus, man. And it's only going to become more of a circus, because I was covering all of it. And then, you know, you'd bring guests on, and then the before you know it, after the Muchnick column, then, you know, the ring boy gets a hold of Muchnick, and there's just so much of this stuff that's going to be hard for me to listen to each and every week. And you're trying to report on it. And the one thing that always got to me is that every week after an episode like this, you'd give them the opportunity to come on to rebut it or to answer it or to dispute it, or just to say, hey, listen, this is outrageous, what these guests are saying about the company. So they never acknowledged this, other than the legal letters that the station began to receive from the WWF, the legal letters.
And what did, can you reveal what they said, or what the gist of them were?
Well, it was just kind of like, the allegations that were being spread about them, and they were threatening the place that I was broadcasting from.
In what regard? How could they?
Well, because these are serious things that were being said.
Well, yeah.
And I know the station received letters from them. I mean, the guy that I dealt with there, and I think he comes on the show in the next, not in particular, but especially around the sex scandal stuff, mm-hmm. that he had gotten letters from the WWF, from Jerry McDevitt. Like I said, I haven't heard these shows yet, Bob. It's 30 years ago. And
right.
I don't...
And some of these shows I haven't heard at all. So along with the listeners, I'm going to be learning like just said, like they are.
Like yeah. I said, week after week, this particular show I had heard previously because of I had given a copy of it to Dark Side of the Ring. And so this show, but, you know, and the Muchnick show I heard, because I've uploaded it, you know, because we're going to be taping that one for next week, is next week's episode. But the vast majority of these shows I have not heard in 30 years. So I'm going to be just as curious to see how it unfolds as everybody else is listening to this.
Well, we've seen wrestlers, baseball players, Olympic athletes, football, even cycling, all with their own steroid scandals. The root of the problem is that everybody's looking for a competitive edge at any cost. And until we learn that the cost can be too high, we're never going to advance on this. Now, I do think, you know, I do believe that steroids are such a crimson mark now that I believe that there are less steroids used in athletics. But you know what? I don't know about masking agents and all that other stuff. The key is to know right from wrong and try not to use them. I mean, seriously. And you know, what are we teaching kids? Just like they were saying on your program. There's right and there's wrong. There's a good way to get to the top and a bad way. And I hope people have learned in the last 30 years, at least a little something about that.
I'm sure they have. You know, all the sports have had their issues with it. But explosive show. Interesting first of the year, kicking off 2022 with what happened in 1992. And all I could say is, Bob, it was a good one. We'll hopefully get some good response from this, from the people who are listening to this podcast. And it was an interesting way to kick off the new year. Let's put it that way.
And folks, if you enjoyed this one, there's more coming.
Yeah, Phil Muchnick will be on the next episode, so that should be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be interesting. Absolutely. All right, so let's get this wrapped up for today, and I do want to remind everybody once again to check out our Patreon account. You can hear these entire shows unedited, without commercials. Well, actually with commercials, but the commercials are from 1992 now. Patrons do get the entire archives of the Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio show. All the original, uncut, unedited shows are there, every one of them. You'll have access to this podcast and each one of our episodes several days before it's released, and those are without commercials. For $5 a month, you'll have access to the archives, the podcast. There are several other tiers if you want bonus audio, video clips, vintage 8mm clips from my archives, photos, Zoom calls, which we had a great one before the first of the year. That was really cool with a bunch of our patrons, which was a lot of fun, and we'll do that every month. I also send out vintage wrestling magazines from the 60s through the 90s, a level for all budgets. We put up new content each and every week. That'll wrap up this edition of John Arezzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight. You could join our private group at facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight podcast and radio show. Our public page to share history is facebook.com, John Arezzi's Memories. There's a private group there as well. Our YouTube channel is doing really well. Please subscribe to it. It features clips from all of our shows and as well as other content. You could go to youtube.com/Pro Wrestling Spotlight for the YouTube channel. Please subscribe to that now. Follow me on Twitter at John Arezzi, Instagram the same at John Arezzi as well. And I want to thank everybody on the Instagram, which is just blowing up. I put up vintage photos each and every night, and it's really, people are really responding very, very well. So thank you for that. If you'd like a signed and numbered copy of my book, Matt Memories, send me an email. John@mattmemories.com. Merchandise is available at tinyurl.com/PWS store. And if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, please give the show 5 stars, review it there, and please tell your friends about us as well. Share the show links. Help us build the audience. It is greatly appreciated. Don't forget to check out our sister podcast, Matt Memories from Madison Square Garden, covering all the shows I covered from the Mecca of all arenas 50 years ago to the day the show takes place. Our next episode will be later this month, covering the house show I went to 50 years ago in January of 1971. That show was hosted, co-hosted by Tim Poutre, and it's researched and written by Richie Garcia. John Arezzi's Pro Wrestling Spotlight podcast is a production of Matt Memories, LLC. Our co-host is Bob Smith. Our producer and editor, Alex Robertson. Donnie Liable covers the news capsule each week. Pro Wrestling Spotlight's creative director is our friend Marsh. And thanks to our Patreon executive producer, Jeremy Priest, and all the patrons for your support for the production of this show. Until next week, when we relive more history with you, this is John Arezzi for the Pro Wrestling Spotlight.